to Artery, with Robert Simpkins, a podcast on art, authorship, and anthropology. In each episode of this collaborative podcast, one anthropologist, specializing in a particular cultural context, has a conversation with an artist of their choosing, exploring issues of authorship and relational creativity in art. In this episode, I speak with Japanese shamisen musician Jaku, from the band The Shamisenists. Drawing inspiration from various genres of contemporary music, as well as classical shamisen traditions, he's released multiple albums and performed throughout Japan and across the globe. The Shamisenists performed at the official Rugby World Cup reception at the Yokohama Arena in 2019, and at Fuji Rock in 2023. Jaku is also the recipient of multiple awards and honours. I've known Jack for nearly a decade now, having first met him in Tokyo, where he was performing on the street. He kindly invited me to his home in Yokohama to have this conversation. Having just returned from a 3-month stay in India, I found Jack in a reflective mood. Our discussion took place in Japanese, so you will hear it in English translation, with Jack's words narrated by Oscar Wren. Welcome back from India, Jack. Thank you for inviting me to your home today here in Yokohama and for agreeing to record our conversation. Perhaps we could begin with your instrument. Could you tell us a little bit about the shamisen, about how your relationship with this instrument began?
The shamisen, compared to other stringed instruments like the sitar, is still quite a domestic instrument, known widely in Japan but much less outside of the country. To put it simply, the shamisen is a 3-stringed instrument. I think that it sounds more similar to something like a banjo than a sitar. The sound is short but loud. I actually began by playing guitar. I learned to play guitar when I was in middle school. Then in high school I wanted to start a band. We didn't have a bass player, so I thought, well, I'll play bass then, because the most important thing to me is to be in a band. I played bass in the band, and music became an increasingly important part of my life. The idea to become a professional musician sprouted, and then blossomed in my mind. I was listening to a lot of pop and rock music from the UK, and perhaps because of this, I thought that I'd also like to have a career that took me to other places in the world. At about 20 years old, I became interested in playing the shamisen. I believe I was 21 when I made the shift from bass guitar to shamisen, so my career as a shamisen musician actually developed from my activities in a rock band as a bass guitarist. I would say that the shamisen has become an important part of who I am and how I see myself, and that my relationship with it developed quite intuitively, its own way.
I see. It's interesting that you began with bass guitar and moved on to shamisen playing from there. You play a kind of shamisen called the tsugaru jamisen. Is there anything particular about this instrument that drew you to it?
Tsugaru jamisen という楽器は、もともと門付けっていう言葉がある。
Yes, the kind of shamisen that I play, the tsugaru jamisen, is historically associated with a kind of itinerant musicianship, going from place to place. Well, other traditional Japanese instruments like the shakuhachi also have this kind of history. For example, Takuhatsu is when an itinerant monk goes on a kind of pilgrimage and asks for alms along the way. They would perform music and make offerings and pray for the blessings of the people. In the old days, people would give vegetables or rice in return. So essentially, that is how they made a living, playing and receiving gifts in return. There are different kinds of shamisen instruments. If you go to Okinawa, there is an instrument called the sanshin. Then, when geisha perform, they use an instrument called a kouta shamisen. The nagauta shamisen is another instrument that people may associate with kabuki theatre. The status associated with each shamisen is different. My tsugaru jamisen has a very strong association with the street. Maybe it's similar to the way people think about blues music. For example, it is a shamisen that, in the past, blind people used to play to make a living. So I think that the soul of the Tsugaru Shamisen can be found on the street. When I play this shamisen, I'm reminded of its history and of the way that it flattens the space between the musician and the people who listen to it. Playing on the street helps me to preserve that mentality. Playing on the street without a stage, lights, amplification or effects, or even good sound, is like testing myself. It's humbling. As for rice and vegetables, well, today we sometimes receive some cash. But actually, street musicians playing today would probably say that because people don't walk around with cash anymore, you need to have a card machine or touch and pay screen, you know, ping and pay kind of device. I see street performers with QR codes on display these days too. Maybe that's this generation's version of the takuhatsu relationship.
Yes. QR codes as an exchange of information in place of gratuities is an interesting idea, as is testing yourself through street performances. I wonder, did you play any kind of street music while you were in India?
No, I didn't play street music during my time in India. I didn't feel as though there was the context for me to play in that way. In Japan, I have a feeling for playing on the street. There's an historical context that I know and relate to. I understand how to do it and where it's possible. Because I know more about Japanese society, I don't feel bad about playing for gratuities. India is a different society, though, and I felt as though it would be egotistical of me to just start playing on the street in the way that I have done in the past in Japan. That being said, I did play on the public train sometimes. In India, the trains often stop on their journey. Sometimes we would be stationary for an hour or more. At those times, the people in the carriages looked really bored. So on a few occasions, I took out my shamisen and began playing. I was thrilled by people's response to it. It reminds me of what this instrument can do, how it can connect me to the world around me in ways I could never do without it. It connects me to so many people who would otherwise just pass by.
How was the experience of playing on the trains for passengers?
Oh, that was amazing. I felt as though I had become everyone's friend. I played some Japanese folk songs that are rooted in a call and response structure, which were fun to try with the passengers because it got them involved. During one song, for instance, the shamisen playing is punctuated with calls of hoi, hoi. It felt like everyone in the train joined in during these phases, which was absolutely thrilling. I have some pictures of these moments with the passengers. It was an unforgettable experience.
That sounds wonderful. You touched a little on the connection between Tsugaru Shamisen and street music. I remember that we first met maybe 9 years ago, while you were performing on the street in the Koenji neighbourhood of Tokyo. Is that something you still do? And why did you feel it was important for you to play on the street?
I actually don't think I played on the street in the last 5 years. If you ask me why, it is because a dilemma appeared over time. On the street, to catch people's attention and bring them together as an audience, you need to produce a strong performance that is loud. I'd also play some shamisen versions of popular songs. If you don't manage to catch people in this way, you probably won't earn very much from playing on the street. So I felt like it was much more about the performance than about the music or being a musician. On the street, it becomes about an atmosphere of attraction. If I could keep that kind of loud, extravagant performance confined to street music, then fine. But the problem was that when I was on stage somewhere else, an essence of that performer would emerge even though I was playing my own music in a different way. Perhaps you could say that it's my responsibility to be able to separate the performer from the musician. But still, when I wanted to give a polite shamisen performance, it would occasionally become too aggressive. The street performer slipped through. Well, since I stopped playing on the street, I have felt closer to the music that I want to play. Each year I feel that I'm getting closer to that.
I think that's fascinating how you distinguish between the performer and the musician in you, and that you feel you needed to prioritize that part of you that you see as the musician. Do you remember when you first began to feel like a musician?
Yes, I think that I'm most driven by the desire to create something that remains after I'm gone. Perhaps that sounds egotistical, I don't know. It was during the third year of middle school that I composed my first song. At that time, on the way home from school, the music just fell out of the sky. I wasn't nearly as diligent as I am now, so I'd probably left early and was walking home, feeling a bit lonely. That's when music came and picked me up. A melody just fell into my mind. When I got home, I used a multi-track recorder, did some overdubbing, etc., and I eventually had my own song. Even now, about 70% of the songs that I've made have been melodies or arrangements that just fell out of the sky in a moment. I'm not trying to say that I'm some kind of musical genius, by the way, but that the music is a gift from somewhere else. To put it simply, I feel like it is a gift from some sort of music gods. Because of this, and because I'm so thankful to them, I feel as though it's my responsibility to make sure that their gifts become songs that are released into the world. Of course, I still have fun as a musician, but I definitely feel as though it would be irresponsible of me not to work hard to make use of those gifts, and I have a strong drive to share these songs with other people.
I love how you describe musical ideas as gifts from the sky, and that part of your music comes from somewhere outside of you. But I wonder, are these gifts always there when you need them? When somebody has commissioned you to write music, for example, can you rely on them then?
いい質問ですね。さっき言った受注とかは締め切りがあります
ね。That's a great question. I receive commissions for music, yes, and I have deadlines just like anyone else. An author has deadlines for their writing. Someone working in an office has many deadlines, and we need to submit our work on time, right? I suppose that this is something that I feel is a part of being a professional musician in my case. Maybe it's a bit like this. In Aomori Prefecture in northeastern Japan, there's a profession called itako, which is a kind of spirit medium. Someone may visit an itako and say that they wish to meet a beloved grandfather who has passed away. The itako would say, I understand, I will bring down your grandfather. And she would use her skill as an itako to do that. In a similar way, because it is a profession, when I want to bring down a song from the sky, I must put myself in a position to be able to accept one. So, for example, if someone contacts me and says, I have a commission for you and the deadline is next month on the 15th, then each time I leave home to go somewhere between here and the station, I'm constantly open to these kinds of ideas. I think towards the commission while I'm moving, and usually one day something drops down. I can't force it, but I can focus my intention towards it. That being said, there are times when it just won't come. Plenty of musicians have this experience. It's a serious problem that causes a lot of anxiety and pain for us. I haven't missed a deadline for a commission yet, but it's definitely something that I worry about. I worry that the gift won't come.
Hmm. Yeah, I suppose that those concerns go hand in hand with creative work. Staying with the subject of inspiration a little longer, are you protective of the original shape or the sound of the gifts from the sky? How do you treat them or develop them?
Well, for me, the first thing I would protect is the compositional key that the music comes to me in, C or D or E, etc. I treat that with a lot of care. But the shamisen often has a problem with tuning. For instance, as a shamisen player, I may need to say to other musicians, I can't do that in this tuning, so please bring the tuning down. That sort of thing. In a band with a vocalist, the key might need to change to suit the range of their voice. So the key often needs to change when composing music. But for me, as much as possible, I try to protect the key that I hear when the music first descends upon me. If I think that I cannot play that on the shamisen, I'll just keep practicing and practicing until I find a way.
Okay. So you feel a lot of responsibility to protect what you recognize as a gift from the sky or the gods of music. Do you have a way to reciprocate this gift? Do you think that it's important to give something back to the sky?
So, それはやっぱりその音楽をシェアして。
Yes, I think that it's quite a natural part of the relationship. I share the music that I make into sounds. I think that if other people find something to enjoy in the music, or that it has some meaning in their lives, then I'm returning the gift. It's either that, or I need to find a way to pay this guy some money.
That paints an interesting picture. I'm wondering about your presence in this relationship with the sky. Would you say that there's something constant, like a thread or a flavour, that can be found throughout your music?
I think so, yes. At this point, I have probably made about 100 songs, maybe released about 50 of them. Each time I release a song, somebody usually tells me that it sounds like me.
And what is Jack's sound?
Ooh, I think that's difficult to put into words. My sound. Sometimes fans have told me that they feel as though they are on a journey when they listen to my music. That made me really happy to hear that. Some people have told me that they can hear the places that I have travelled to in the songs that I write. So the sound of a journey could be one characteristic of my sound. More specifically, among shamisen players, the characteristics of my sound are probably quite particular. Until I was 20 years old, I had more or less nothing to do with shamisen music. I was listening to UK rock and J-pop music, but not the shamisen, which has a very different musical structure. My shamisen music often has a structure more closely resembling that of pop and rock music, what we might describe in Japan as the A melody, B melody, hook structure. So I suppose that a major characteristic, a big part of my sound, is that of a pop structure within shamisen music.
About other musicians when you write your songs. So perhaps we could talk about your involvement with the band The Shamisenists for a moment. How does your creative process work with the band?
With the band, we generally go on a music camp to a cabin out in the countryside. Depending on the project, we might spend 3 or 4 days there, maybe a week, and shut ourselves off from the rest of the world. Well, thinking about that process, I suppose that it's fair to say that we have some arguments. That's a part of it. Perhaps it's strange to call them arguments, actually, but whatever I call them, that seems to be the way that our best music is made. There would be little point in everyone just saying yes, yes, yes all of the time. Instead, we exchange our opinions back and forth frequently during this time.
And how might one of these arguments unfold?
The moments of making music are the most joyful moments in life for me, and I'm probably quite intense in those moments. For example, when we go to music camp, I'm not at all interested in sleeping. I do not want to sleep. The other band members, Yuji and Kyohei, say to me, "Jack, it's 1:30 in the morning, we should go to sleep. If we sleep well and get up tomorrow feeling good, then we'll definitely make better music." But I say, "No way. An idea has just dropped, so we have to do this right now. We came to this camp especially to make music. You're pros, come on." And then sometimes when they're sleeping, I'll turn up and tell them, "Oi, wake up. We have music to make." Yes, that creates some arguments. They say, "You're annoying, Jack. We want to sleep." But you know, I think that people who compose the music in their bands might understand this situation. In the moment of creation, it's like a kind of intense stimulation, a kind of trance. The priority of sleep or food is suddenly really low. That's quite unhealthy, I suppose. I'm not somebody who has a very balanced life, but I have a philosophy of music making, and I think that I try to protect that.
Thank you for sharing your music camp stories. I enjoyed listening to those. It's interesting to hear about these social dynamics in moments of creation. Do you think that the other band members have a philosophy like you do? And do you think that you protect theirs as well?
I see. Well, I would put it like this. I think that in general, there are two kinds of musician. One kind wants to express their music or their philosophy of music, and the other kind connect less with this philosophy, but express themselves within the performance. in our band, the Shamisenists, I think that Yuji and Kyohei have their own outlook on music. But what they often say to me is, we like your approach to music, Jack, and we're happy to follow that. I'm very grateful for the trust that they put in me, and it makes everything so much easier. I think that we respect what each other brings to the band as individuals.
Okay. Is there a balance between your respect towards one another and towards the music as the collective creation that remains after you're done?
Yes, I think so. But if music is a gift received from the sky, then I admit to trying to protect that most of all, the music. That's where my respect is directed, towards the existence of something that I see as bigger than any of us. At times, I even go against my own view or preference for how things should be done out of respect towards the music and the responsibility that I feel to release it into the world.
Staying with the process of making music and the people involved, could you tell us who was involved in making your latest album?
Sure. In producing the album Re Tokyo, we worked with Tatsu-san, our producer. He was a bass player in a ska rock band in the 80s and 90s. We also worked with guests. We worked with a wonderful koto player from Fukui Prefecture called Rena-san. We also worked with a percussionist from a band who blend Japanese and Latin folk music called Minyo Crusaders. They are currently on a world tour. We worked with a vocalist from France called Tangi. Lastly, many of the tracks included a keyboard and pianist called Kimura-san, who is our new support member in the band.
Wow, so you collaborated with a lot of people on the album. Why was this important to you?
I think this is connected to a concern that I have as a composer of music. I think that there are times when it is impossible to express what the song wants to express with the shamisen, bass shamisen, and drums alone. When a song is given to me, it may be that I hear a piano, a koto, some sort of percussion maybe, and I realise that we don't have the means to create the song ourselves. At those times, one option is to invite others to participate in the making of a song so that it can be fully realised.
Ah, I see. So when an idea or song comes to you, you also recognize that you may not be able to bring about its full expression by yourself.
That's right. And that realization is a part of the reality and process of composing the song. Then there are other realities to consider as a musician. Another reason why I like to invite other artists is because we are helping each other to reach more people, a wider audience, and to advertise our music. This is quite an important reality of being a musician today. If we have the opportunity to work with a famous musician, it could help us to increase our status as a band. It's like a flip side to the creative work of composition, a kind of strategy to allow ourselves to keep making music.
Thank you for sharing that with us. I enjoy how you see collaboration as a way to overcome your limitations as a musician, and to realise the full potential of a song. This seems like a good time to talk a little bit about authorship. When you work with other people, how do you decide upon the authorship of a piece of music?
I see. That isn't something that I personally decide. In Japan, there is a copyright management organisation called JASRAC. When musicians compose a piece of music, they register everything with that organisation. In other countries, there are probably multiple such organisations, but in Japan, at least at first, there was only JASRAC. JASRAC took care of all the rights for the music. Because that became a bit of a problem with some legal issues, there are now other organisations as well. It isn't all JASRAC anymore. That being said, I think that the majority of music rights, maybe 80-90%, are still dealt with by them. But at least now there are also intermediate companies between the musicians and JASRAC, with whom we can discuss the allocation of authorship for our music.
So the copyright management organisation is involved in attributing the legal authorship of your songs. How about within the band itself? How do you discuss this?
That's usually a phone call. Hey, Yuji, you know that song? How would you feel about 70% me and 30% you? Yeah, that's fine. You compose most of it, Jack, so that's probably about right, isn't it? Mostly we either call one another or we meet in person and have a chat about it.
And you do this for each song?
Well, I write most of the songs, so those sorts of conversations are less common in our band. On our third album, Yuji was part of the composition for songs. On the song Lotus, Yuji composed about 80% of the music, so we decided that he would have the main authorship of that song. I was involved in the arrangement, and we decided on 20% for my role. That's generally the way that we make decisions for each song.
I'm just thinking about the presence of different band members in the songs, and it makes me wonder how you see the influence of other artists in your music, and how you come to understand your music as your own, even while it contains traces of others.
Yes, let me see. I think that structure is important. My personality comes through in composition. Then there are the dynamics, where a song suddenly becomes quiet or soft, or it bursts forth. I think that the author's presence exists and could be identifiable in those areas of the music. In the same way, we each have a unique voice or way of speaking. When somebody constantly talks about themselves, we might hear it as a long, and we recognise their sound in that way.
I enjoy how you talk about presence in music as a kind of intonation, like the qualities of a voice specific to each person. But how about other kinds of presence, like an environment? I wonder if you recognise the presence or cadence of places, or even certain situations in your compositions. How might these influence your music?
While I was in India, I visited some artists and we ate and drank tea together. Those artists had a rooftop space. We went up there and the moon was so bright. In that instant, a song came to me. I think that a place can do that. As well as places, vibration is also really inspiring. For example, talking to people, enjoying that atmosphere, raises my own vibration and helps me to make music. Sometimes, interesting architecture has a similar effect, or a music venue. At those times, I switch modes. For example, if I visit a music venue, I might think to myself, I would really like to play here, even after 20 years of making music. I switch mode in that moment and a voice appears in my head like, Jack, write a song now. Do it now. When that happens, I rush off to the toilet or someplace and make a voice recording on my phone. A readiness for those moments has become part of my everyday life as a musician. A big one for me is when I'm at a festival or watching a famous musician's live performance. I begin to imagine myself performing. But those times are frustrating as well. Even though I just want to enjoy these musicians' performance, I want to record something new as quickly as possible. I'm afraid of losing the inspiration that just hit me, so even though the concert is still going on, I rush off to the toilet to make a recording. Sometimes I listen back to it later and I can't hear anything over the sound of the musicians performing, so I end up deleting it. Another one, quite philosophical I suppose, happened a lot while I was in India. When I'm either talking to somebody or in an environment, I might begin to feel a sort of strange feeling that I don't usually feel, not my usual state of mind. And I think to myself, I'd like to make music while I feel different like this. That's a common pattern. Then there are the times when I'm not thinking of anything at all, and my thoughts are just drifting, a little like meditation perhaps. The shower is a place where this happens to me a lot. My mind drifts and something just pops into my mind.
As I was listening to you, I thought how the struggle between wanting to enjoy a music performance and wanting to leave it to make music is fascinating. It's as though inspiration and guilt exist in the same moment. Do you often feel these kinds of conflicts mixing together as a musician?
That's a great question. Yes. Yes, I do. But when I think about the kind of music that tops the music charts these days, there's a lot of music that uses samples of other music, like a drum beat from the 1970s. I hear music sampling the world around us, like train announcements. The next station will be that kind of thing. Sampling is commonly used in hip-hop, of course. But I don't think that those artists feel too much guilt about that. One reason might be because musicians can pay a subscription, what's called hōkatsukeyaku in Japanese. There's a website where sampling music is sold, and artists might pay 20 or 30,000 yen a year, so maybe $150 or $200, to use these samples officially in their songs. This kind of practice has become very common nowadays, so the guilt of being inspired or influenced by other people's work can be taken away with a payment. In my case, seeing musicians perform live and being inspired in that moment, something of their music naturally enters into me. At those times, to be more specific, I might find that there is something too similar about the music I've made. So I make sure to rewrite and rearrange it while keeping the part of me that exists in there. I'm also influenced by something I might call unexpected music. I could just be going about my day and I hear the sounds of agriculture, or say the noises in Shibuya, combined in a way that sounds like music to me. For instance, the sound of a car horn is whee, and the sound of a cooler is mixed together, and I hear that as music. Probably about 5% of the music I have made has been rooted in the accumulation of noises that surround me in an environment. In India as well, I went to visit a friend's house, and while I was there, I went outside to smoke a cigarette. There was this extractor fan where I was smoking, and I listened quietly to this really cool sound of a and it reminded me of a raga in Indian classical music. That was the beginning of a piece of music for me. At those times, it feels like a miraculous discovery, a kind of coincidence of being in the environment with those sounds. And there's no guilt from that, right? I mean, it's an extractor fan.
I suppose not. So, do you hear the sound of instruments like your shamisen within these environmental sounds?
Yes, sometimes it comes through quite directly. The sound of construction in Tokyo, for example. Kang, 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 kang. Sometimes I hear those sounds as the rhythm of a shamisen and I begin to hear music. Then there are times when it works in the opposite way, when the sound of the shamisen is absent and I think about the shamisen because I want to hear it in the mix. For instance, in the sound of the world around me, or during a music performance I'm watching, I want to bring the shamisen into those sounds to complete them as music for me. But it's always a balance, because there can be times when I try to force the shamisen into music that it doesn't work naturally with. If I do that to a song that I have received as a gift from the sky, then I feel as though I'm not respecting the music as it naturally wants to be expressed. It's a mistake to think that because I'm a shamisen player, music requires the shamisen sound. That's something else I worry about when making music.
You are quite conscious of when your shamisen fits and doesn't fit into music that you are involved with. Speaking of fitting in, you've talked to me in the past about how there are quite formal schools of shamisen training and performance. How would you describe your personal relationship with these? Do you feel that they are a part of your music, or do you feel your music to be something else?
I feel quite separated from that. I did have a shamisen master when I was learning, but at that time I struggled to continue learning in that way. And after about 3 years, I left that student and teacher relationship.
I see. So having left that behind, what do you feel your position as a shamisen player to be today? Where do you see yourself in relation to Japanese musical traditions and to more contemporary forms of music performance?
I'm glad to be asked that question. Thank you. The relationship that I have with the heritage of shamisen and towards contemporary music can perhaps be explained by considering the way that I use my name. So my stage name is Jack. It's an easy name for lots of people to grasp and pronounce. People tell me that I chose a good stage name to use as a musician for these reasons. But Jack isn't just a stage name. The name Jakku has a kunyomi and an onyomi reading. In kunyomi, it means lonely or solitary, and also sky. The onyomi reading Jakku ku has quite a noble meaning in Buddhism. Jakumetsu, for instance, is when a monk achieves enlightenment, when karma is carried out. Ku in this reading is associated with a form of emptiness within a sutra, to put it simply, zero or nothing. When I began using the name Jack as a stage name, I wanted all of these meanings to be present. It would be a name that was both connected to the spiritual meaning within the kanji and a name that could represent my relationship with contemporary music and people beyond Japan. For a long time now, the secular form of my name has been prevalent. For example, on stage playing rock music with an electric shamisen, I felt closer to the Jack of my secular stage name. But while I was in India, learning about the structure and forms of Indian music with local musicians, I felt as though I was returning to the spiritual meaning of my name. It sounds strange to say, but for the last 10 years in Japan, I feel like the secular Romanized Jack has been on stage the most. But recently, I feel like I have returned to the origins of my name and to the traditions associated with both my name and my instrument. In India, I heard so much about discipline and music performance. Everywhere I went, discipline, discipline, discipline. And this is also a common feature of musical training with Japanese instruments, tempering the body through training and discipline to cultivate technique. I kept noticing these similarities and the respect I developed for the musicians I met in India and their attitudes towards technique made me reflect upon my own training and my relationship with my shamisen master. I began to feel closer to the roots of the shamisen again. I'm 38 years old now. I have more life ahead of me, and now I have my own pupils to teach. So even while I think that tradition can feel quite stiff sometimes, I don't feel the same pressure from it anymore. Now I feel connected to a tradition that I recognise in shamisen music, and I feel closer to my name as it is written in Japanese. There was a time when I wanted to cut loose from the traditions of shamisen music, but now I feel as though I want to protect those traditions as well, that both traditional and contemporary shamisen are a part of who I am as a musician.
That's great. Thank you for sharing those aspects of your personal journey with us. You seem to be struggling less with the different gravitational pulls created by being a contemporary shamisen musician now. So we're coming to the end of our time for today, and I wanted to thank you for our discussion and for being so generous with your time. As a final question, and because you mentioned your pupils, I wanted to ask you about teaching. Does teaching the shamisen influence how you feel about your music?
Oh yes, it affects how I experience music. It's been about 18 years since I began playing the shamisen, and although it's bad behaviour for a musician, I must admit that I don't really practice very much anymore. But during lessons, I teach those basics, and I rediscover again and again how cool simple shamisen notes and phrases can be. Repetitive exercises like scales, for example. Dun, 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 dun. I hear my students play those scales and I think, no, that's really cool. That could be the beginning of a song, right? Each time I enter the classroom, I feel like I'm rediscovering the simplicity of the shamisen. At the same time, unexpected things emerge from the way that the students play. Sometimes they play and the sounds are quite unconventional. They might stop and say, ah, whoops, that was a mistake. No, that was cool. It sounded great, I say. It's like something we discover together. So I tell them, please keep playing like that.
And do you ever see yourself in your students?
I think that when my students improve and become more confident players, I also feel more confidence in myself. If my students are getting better, then I feel as though I must be doing something right. It's like in baseball or soccer. People who weren't great players during their career can become great coaches. So it's almost like a separate world for them within that sport. It's the same for a musician, maybe. Somebody who isn't a great shamisen player can become a great teacher later on. That's what I mean by confidence. Just because I'm confident as a performer doesn't mean that I have confidence in myself as a teacher. I'm always so happy to see my students learning and improving. I also blame myself when I see a student mishandle a shamisen or develop bad habits. I think that they must be mirroring me, so it makes me look at myself once again and make sure that I'm behaving in a way that has a positive influence on them. So it's not the student's mistake, it's mine. In that way, they're kind of a mirror to me.
Artery with Robert Simpkins, a podcast on art, authorship and anthropology, supported by the UK Arts and Humanities Research Council. Hope to speak with you again soon.